adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
Singapore, vado a Singapore, benedette care signore. Singapore, vado a Singapore, che mania di fare all'amore. E finisce che io vado dritto al creatore. Fiume giallo, giù nel fiume giallo, via di qui lasciatemi andare.
And welcome back to Red to This Way. I'm your host for this episode, Paolo Mangoni. And as always, welcome to Michael the Monster D'Angelo. Julian Padu D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
I'm doing well. And how's Mr. Chris Buscelli doing?
I'm good. Welcome back, everybody.
So, Michael, what'd you think about that song?
Am I the only one who does that anymore? I feel like I'm out of place here.
I think Chris still does it.
Yeah, if it was a good song, I'd probably join in on you.
What was the last one? What was the song last week, Paolo? Cavallo?
It was Samarcanda. Cavallo. Cavallo. You know, that's the one.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, I know you have that clip, so you know, that'll come up. You know, probably this weekend.
See?
And again, for obvious reasons, we'll get to that later on in the episode. But again, I like to play obscure songs to kind of get some comments from the non-obscure Italian aficionados.
See?
Anyway, enough chit-chat. Let's get to business. This week was Nations League semifinals, Italy-Spain at the San Siro. Okay, fine. I'll just start it off. Bonucci and the Insigne miss cost that game. Chris, what do you think?
I mean, I would say more so Bonucci. I thought it was just that second yellow was just a stupid play by him. Again, experienced player. You know you're on a yellow. I know some people on Twitter were saying, you know, maybe could have been yellow, maybe not. For me, that is a yellow. Mm-hmm. Elbows up. There's a bit of a swinging motion there as well. So, and then from there, it's always going to be an uphill climb. Credit to the other 10 guys that stayed on the pitch. They made it difficult for Spain. They made it still an interesting match. But obviously, again, with playing down a man for that long, Italy was never really going to come out on top. Insigne should have done better as well. But I would still go back to the Bonucci bonehead play for where the game turned.
Yeah, so again, there was a lot of comments about, of course, I don't want to get this clear, we lost this game, but there's a lot of comments about Donnarumma being booed. Michael, Julian, any one of you want to have your say on that?
Michael? Julian, yeah, Julian, you go first.
Okay. Didn't this happen to him before when he was with Milan? During one of his contract negotiations where they actually booed him or something along those lines and he didn't have a great game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they threw fake money at him.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly it. And again, Michael, you and I were talking. They realized that okay, San Siro, the fans put up a banner. Okay. Now, does Mancini take any of the blame for starting a player that he knew it was going to get booed?
No. No, the blame for if that affected his performance rests solely on the people who were booing him because they're idiots. That's it. End of story.
I will play devil's advocate.
Don't. You don't even need to, man. They're dummies.
Again, they're fans. We all knew that this was going to happen. That banner.
Okay, wait. Hold on. They're fans of the Italian national team as well or just Milan?
No, they're Milan fans. They're Milan fans.
But they're not fans of like the Italian team, national team?
Well, when they win.
Oh my god. Okay.
you get my point?
Again, yeah, they're dummies. I get it. Yeah, continue.
So you're not going to change their behavior by scolding them, okay? The way to do it is not give them
scolding them. They're just dumb.
Okay, sure. They're dumb. But again, if I was the national team manager and I saw a banner that said Donnarumma, you're not welcome here. You're a shitty person.
Yeah.
you obviously know that this guy is going to get like just rained down on booze, and it's going to affect his performance, and it's going to affect his mental, well, his mental state during that game. You know, he can say all he wants that he does. He looks at his phone, doesn't care about anything. They got a picture of him crying at halftime.
Yeah, I
you know,
mean, you know, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, like again, it's not. I don't think Mancini made a mistake putting their number one goalkeeper in the game. Like that's not the mistake. The mistake is having is believing that these fans, so-called fans, would behave appropriately during a game, and they would not and will never, right? So
see, I think I'm going to come in with a third angle on this. To me, that's on Donnarumma. You're a professional player. You need to be able to move past all that during, like, you need to get in mindset and focus.
Yeah.
When you're playing, you can't have fans affect your performance.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, actually.
Well, listen, and I can say Julian's right, because after the first goal was conceded, 2 minutes later, almost conceded a second one as well. It hit off his hands, hit the post.
And you know who stopped that?
The guy who got a red card 20 minutes later?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Chris, yeah, what's your thoughts on Donnarumma?
that sound effect is my thoughts. I agree with Julie. I think he has to learn how to handle that better. There are going to be away fans that say, in my opinion, that are going to say worse that things than what the Milan fans or the Italy fans were saying in this game. So
yeah, but but Chris, just to counter that, you have already, let's say it's 50-50 split in the stadium of away versus home. That's never the case, but let's say it's 50-50. So you already have 50% booing you or whatever, trying to whistle at you. We're not even thinking a whistle, just like not cheering for you. Then you have the other half who are supposed to be on your side who are initiating the whistling. So, of course, now you're going to have 100% of the stadium whistling and jeering you. And like I understand you're supposed to, you know, you're professional, whatever, come for that. Like, yeah, like at the same time, you shouldn't have to expect friendly fire just because some 40-year-old men are butthurt at your decision to go get money instead of play for the team that, you know, they want to marry. There you go.
I would just say, I mean, but to the 100%, like, you tell me when PSG goes to play Lille, the entire stadium's not going to be booing him and calling him every name under the moon?
Maybe.
They're going to. He's gonna get the verbal abuse, and I'm not saying any of that's right, but I get it's more emotional because he's been with the club forever, but yeah, I think he's going to have to, like Julian said, learn to get past that, because that's not going to stop in the near future. And he's going to have to learn to deal with that, and it can't affect his performance the way it did in this game.
And he probably made it worse by stating that
by crying.
Well, not by crying, but he also got a Milan. He showed off a Milan tattoo over the past few days, and I'm like, again, you're not helping your case by trying to endear yourself to a fan base that you essentially pissed off because you were holding out for more money.
Yeah, but he's just gonna put Inter before that, and then he's gonna just to save his tattoo.
Anyway, so. Again, Spain was lucky in not scoring a third goal. Chiesa rounded out the score at 2-1 by starting off a counterattack and to give Pellegrini an open net. So again, the game would have been, listen, in my opinion, the game would have been changed if Sirigu started. I'm just putting it out there.
Oh my
okay?
God.
I'm just putting it out there. Again, in my opinion, hindsight's 20/20.
Chris, do you think that Sirigu should have started this game?
No.
Like, thank you. Like,
no.
Paulo, you're crazy. Didn't you?
We already knew that, though.
Yeah.
I will say, too, sorry, before we move on.
Yeah.
I was happy with this. I was not expecting Bastoni to start. Mm-hmm. We spoke about it, and I was hoping he would. I just thought Mancini was just so deeply in love with Chiellini that Chiellini would start no matter what. So that was a nice, unexpected surprise.
Yeah, but actually, it was both Bonucci and Bastoni that got burned on the
first
goal.
Yeah, yeah. He gets rewarded by getting burned by, again, the cross first, but then, yeah, like, he was nowhere to be. He was nowhere to clear that ball. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, just, again.
For Fernando Torres? No.
Well, Doppietta di Fernando Torres? Again, maybe that. And then, anyway, I'm getting off topic here, so I'm going to corral myself. And let's move on to the third place game. So it was Italy-Belgium. Again, I thought this was a good game to watch. First half a bit slow. There was maybe one good Belgium chance, but in the second half is where it really kicked off. Julian Nick Barrow from London got the first goal. What did you think about that?
See, I mean, it was a great finish by him. I've seen this a few times now with Inter. Whenever it's corner, he's always just waiting like 2 yards outside the box for that volley. And that's clearly what he did here as well. Ball popped up, landed right at his foot, and he was able to get all of it and keep it low in the bottom corner.
I thought that was one of the best goals so far in this Nations League. Chris, you probably, you know, disagree with the Theo Hernandez goal, but I definitely thought that that Belgium deserved more from this game. They hit like three posts all game. They did get a goal towards the end of the game with the Cattelaer scoring through again Donnarumma's legs. Chris, I know you were happy about that, but what'd you think about the PK on that was called on Chiesa?
I'll just go quickly. So I still haven't been able to find a high quality video that slows everything down. So, but I will say in live speed, real time, I didn't think it was a PK. It looked like, I think it was Castagne. It looked like he got a touch on the ball and then made contact with Chiesa. But I know there was another angle at full speed where you can see that the contact was made first. So on second look, I do agree it was the right call, but I was a bit questionable at first.
Julian, overall thoughts on the game?
I mean, it was a good comeback game. Go out, have a disappointing performance against Spain, lose the game. It's still nice to come out and get the result that you were looking for.
And Michael?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think the true story, though, of, I guess, this weekend is like France winning it and how they won it, I think. But that's, other than that, I think, again, like Julian said, it's a good comeback win.
Yeah, something Theo Hernandez, right, Chris?
Yes.
Okay, so I believe it was Tuesday. Switzerland faced off against Lithuania. They won 4-0. So they actually tie Italy on points, and they have a better goal differential. So what this essentially means, there's a bunch of different scenarios, but that game on November 12th against Switzerland in Italy is now fundamental. So Italy cannot afford to be tied on points because then Switzerland has the better goal differential. So how important, again, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, that Bulgaria game may actually come back and haunt them.
Well, just to clarify, it looks like Italy is still ahead on goal differential, unless I'm looking at the wrong table here, but I'm seeing Italy 12 goals for, 1 goal against, so plus 11. Mm-hmm. And then Switzerland 10 goals for, 1 goal against, for a difference of plus 9. So if that's accurate and we draw Switzerland, then we're still in front. So Switzerland, again, if this is accurate, Switzerland would have to come out and play for the win against us. And I think that obviously favors Italy because then the more they push forward, the more, you know, players like Insigne and Chiesa can take advantage of that extra space.
Okay, so you're probably right about that. I must have read wrong the goal difference. So you're probably right about that. But I was reading some of the Italian newspapers, and they were saying that if the points are tied, it's not necessarily goal differential as well. It could also go to, like, fair play rankings. So it could be based on yellow cards received, red cards received, and so on and so forth. So what the Italian, essentially what Gazzetta dello Sport was arguing was that the a draw against Switzerland is not necessarily enough.
I think that's fair, but that's also, you have to consider that there are other games after that. I mean, you would expect Italy to get points in those remaining games, right? Because are there not more games after Switzerland?
Yeah, I think they play Northern Ireland, and I think they play Bulgaria again. Michael, fact check?
Yeah, I'll check here.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, but all of that to say that, I mean, technically, yes, they could, you know, draw Switzerland and then, you know, shit the bed against Bulgaria, Northern Ireland, and Switzerland could win their last two games. So a win against Switzerland doesn't guarantee anything, or a draw for that matter, but it's definitely more favorable for Italy.
So all I see is that they play Switzerland and North Ireland. So I think that might be it.
Okay. Yeah, that is. I pulled it up here, and Switzerland has to play Bulgaria after.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where the Bulgaria comes in. Okay, so, well, then that means Switzerland has an extra game, correct? Or they play the same day?
Same amount. So we're both at six. So Italy's at six, and Switzerland are at six, and there's eight games total. So they both have two games to play.
Okay. So then, yeah, I don't know. I still think that...
Theoretically, if Switzerland comes out with a positive result against Bulgaria, like enough so that it's, you know, it brings up their goal differential, maybe that's mm-hmm. where the concern is.
Yeah,
I think it also could have been if Italy win, they automatically qualify.
Yes, right,
because that would make sense. If they win, Switzerland won't be able to catch them.
Yeah,
that's also true. So again, I don't know, that Bulgaria result still bothers me, but again, that's just me. So again, that's the November international break. Switzerland, Italy, and then Italy, Northern Ireland. Correct? Correct. Play Northern Ireland at home?
At home, I believe. No, I think they play in Ireland.
Northern Ireland.
Wait, are they playing in Switzerland?
Nope.
No, they're in Italy.
They're in Italy.
So I think they play away.
Yeah, they're in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Okay, so they probably play at Windsor Park. Okay.
Yeah, they play Windsor Park.
So actually, I saw something about the game that's supposed to be played in Italy. So theoretically, it's supposed to be scheduled to be played at the Stadio Olimpico.
Mm-hmm.
But they might move it to Bergamo because I think I saw the Stadio Olimpico is being used the 4th, the 6th, and the 7th.
The field's going to be a mess.
Yeah, and then there's also a Six Nations game too, so it's a rugby game that's going to be played at the Stadio Olimpico. So again, they have to play a Lazio game there as well during that time period.
Mm.
So I think they might move the game to Bergamo because of the field is going to be such in a rough shape. And then again, Lazio still have to play there for their home game. So, and Roma. So that's just something to look out for. I'm going to be interested about that. Anything else do we want to chat about the international break? I guess Canada. Chris, do you have a Canada update?
Yeah, quickly. So Canada, more recently, they played Jamaica and, oh boy, help me out with the other one. Mexico. So huge draw against Mexico in Mexico, which is very important. The Azteca, very difficult place to play. And for the first time, I think, in our lifetime, Canada... also the points are significant, but Canada also played very well. I think John Herdman, Canada's manager after the game, said it best. He goes, you know, we're you know, content, but also disappointed at the same time because we thought we could have came away with the 3 points. So, good performance there. And then they drew Jamaica in Jamaica. The pitch was very poor. A couple of key players were missing, but still came away with the draw. And on Wednesday, Canada play at home against Panama, and a win would vault Canada back into the top three. So very exciting times, and I'll be attending that match. So looking forward to seeing Alfonso Davies live.
We're going to have a post-match synopsis. I expect it on my desk.
No problem. 10 p.m. sharp.
Is Davies also scheduled to play?
I would hope so. It'll be three games. He'll have started all three games, but he's one of their best players, so I certainly hope he's there. Unlike the one time, side note, I went to Montreal with some friends, and it was Impact and Red Bull playing, and this is when Nesta and Thierry Henry were both playing there, or Nesta with Impact
and Marco Henry Navarro, with Red Bull, right?
Yes, and neither one of them played. They're both injured, so it's brutal. So yes, hoping Davies and David are both healthy and available.
Okay, so help me out. Like it was the first point in at Azteca Stadium since 1980, and then you tied Jamaica 0-0.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there? Like, what's the discrepancy in those two results?
Yeah, like I said, there were. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just gonna. Yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's. A lot of it, though, is adrenaline, right? Like, you're playing against Mexico and you're fighting for a result, right? Whereas, you know, you're coming off that, the high is gone, and now you have to fight in a territory that's not as, like, not as, I guess,
red. There was also, like, the stadium was closed. There was no fans in the stadium. So right. I don't know if it's still COVID protocols or what, but...
Yeah, that's a good point, Mike. Actually, I didn't even factor that in. But on top of that, like I mentioned, the pitch was in poor shape.
Right.
You had a couple of key players that were unavailable due to yellow card suspension. So
yeah.
I think when you factor all of that in, and traditionally, you know, a point against Jamaica is still good. So all of that considered, it's nothing to panic about.
Okay, so just remind the viewers, listeners, how CONCACAF,
the format
works. Yeah, it works. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's eight teams left in the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. They all play each other twice. So total of 14 games, one home, one away. And the top three at the end of that will automatically qualify. And then I need to double check, but I believe the fourth place team will be entered into a playoff qualifier against another, a country from a different region. So likely, Asia or South America, one of those regions.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes, though. I heard that as well.
Yep.
Okay, so I think that concludes our international roundup. So let's get right into the Serie A preview. Okay, Julian, we'll start with you because there's big news coming out of Inter.
I mean, I don't know what news. I mean, there's always news regarding Inter. So they play Lazio at noon on Saturday, which is a little bit crazy because the South American qualifiers are Thursday night. So for Inter, the rumors going around are Lautaro and Correa are flying back to Milan Friday night. And then Vecino, Vidal, and Sanchez Saturday morning. So those three for sure are not playing. And then Correa also potentially picked up an injury, so he's probably also not playing. So we maybe have Lautaro. Now, the big news, Paulo, you could have been talking about the renewals. Lautaro, Brozovic, and Barella are all supposed to be renewing in the near future. But again, that's soccer lingo for probably by January.
Or are they? Yes.
If you ask the CDS, or is that your favorite one, Paulo, or the guy dances?
Oh, yeah. Correa dello Sport. Yeah, that's my...
Yeah.
That's my
at the wall and hope something sticks.
Yeah. Well, you know, if Kessie leaves, I'm sure Milan will try to swoop for Brozovic.
I saw that.
And then I got Chris, another injury news today.
Tata Rusciano?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Most likely will start against Hellas Verona.
Yeah, Mike Maignan out for, I think it was 2 to 3 weeks.
Most likely a month.
Not 2 to 3 weeks. but yeah, so he's out, unfortunately. So Tata Rusciano will likely get the start. Paul and I, we were just talking about Plizzari offline. For me, anyways, he's more talented. He's a better goalkeeper right now, but I guess he's carrying a knock as well. So I would hope to see him anyways before Maignan's back. It'd be good to see where he's at. And potentially, I don't think he'd push for Maignan's spot in you know, next season and going forward, but definitely a solid backup. So Milan's been, you know, pretty lucky, I think, compared to other clubs so far with injuries. So it was a matter of time.
Yeah, just ask Julian over there. and also Michael, ask Michael as well with a couple of injuries. You know, so far, might damage Juventus's prospects against Roma. What do you think?
Well, it sounds like, I guess there's Rabiot is out with COVID.
Yeah.
Who else is there? There's
McKinney could be out as well.
He's rumored, possible out, but it sounds like Dybala might be back, possibly on the bench, but.
And then I think Morata's out as well.
Morata is out still. He'll miss it. But apparently Arthur might be back.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah. But that's, we'll see.
Anyway, so Juventus is also struggling with injuries. And then Roma, there could be some Roma news because Tammy Abraham limped off after coming on as a sub. So he's on the pitch for 50 minutes before coming back off. So there might be some more news coming out this week that he might be in doubt for the Juventus game as well. So something to look out for this week about that. That's pretty much the big three. Another game to look out for is Spezia Salernitana. Again, Thiago Motta on the hot seat for our sack race. We'll see how that pans out. Salernitana looking to maintain a winning streak. They beat Genoa before the international break. And speaking of Genoa, we have a very special interview coming up next with the Genoa fan club in Toronto. So Genoa plays Sassuolo. So again, they're looking to bounce back after losing to Salernitana. And I think Berardi wants to maintain his goal scoring streak. So I think he scored out of like the four of the last five games in all competitions or something like that. The only game that he didn't score was against Spain. Michael, look that up.
No.
Anyway, I think it's true, so just take my word for it. And then okay. Another one is Napoli-Torino. So again, Napoli's still undefeated. And then Juric is looking to take them down. And speaking of an international break affecting a club, Napoli, 16 players on international break. 16 players.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So
squad rotation.
Yeah, the squad. Yeah, well, again, Napoli has essentially two midfields that they can like rotate into. So you know they got six good center midfielders. So I think they're hopefully everyone comes back injured, and we'll see how that plays out. Well, sorry, right, I mean healthy. Hell, it comes back healthy.
Okay, so yeah. Confirmed. So two PKs in his past two goals, one for Italy, obviously, and the one for Sassuolo against Inter. And then scored the only goal in Sassuolo Salernitana and scored the consolation for Sassuolo against Atalanta. There you go.
So, yeah, so four
last five.
There you go. Spot on. And my memory's still good, Michael.
See?
Okay, that's it. So that's pretty much it for the Serie A Round 8 preview. Chris, I know you have something special lined up.
I do. So last week we brought back Who Am I? So, last week Julian got it right there, right at the death. So there is a 5-minute timer. Again, reminder for anybody who's new or just needs a refresher. So I'll give the guys three hints. Once the three hints are given, the timer will start, and then they have the choice of asking me a question, which I can choose not to answer, or they can ask me for the bonus question. And the bonus question is sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit. So. They have to tread carefully when it comes to that. So we will get going if you guys are ready.
Yep,
we're ready.
All right, so hint number one. This non-Italian defender has been in Serie A for more than five seasons. Hint number two. He has played in both the Europa League and Champions League. Hint number three. He has made more than 45 appearances for his national team. So I'll start again. Hint one, this non-Italian defender has been in Serie A for more than five seasons. Hint number two, he has played in both the Europa League and Champions League. Hint number three, he has made more than 45 appearances for his national team.
Okay, so Julian, why does Diego Godin come to mind?
Did he play... Well, yeah, he would have because they finished third in Europa League that year.
Yeah, but
there's a lot. We're going to need.
What was more. Chris? What was the first one with Serie A?
This non-Italian defender has been in Serie A for more than five seasons.
Yeah, he has.
Okay, so yeah, Godin.
Yeah.
So, okay. That rules that out.
There's a lot of players. We're going to need to narrow this down. Because I was thinking Koulibaly off the top of my head. And then I also thought Skriniar as well.
Yeah. Okay. We need a. Okay. Will you answer the question about what club?
No. Do you want me to give you his last name too?
If you want.
Maybe next time.
All right. Do we have? we need to narrow it down. So you want to take the bonus in?
But it could be good or it could be shit.
I feel like it's going to be shit.
Yeah, it's probably going to be shit.
Okay, how about this? Where is the club currently situated, like right now? Like
what? In Serie A.
In the league.
Yeah, table. What? Are you nuts? Yeah, like, what position? So we can look at the table.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I'm not answering that.
Damn it.
Next stupid question, yeah. You automatically lose.
All right, let's take the bonus hint.
Yeah, might as well.
All right, bonus hint. The year before he came to Serie A, he was not playing in a top five league.
Ooh. So more than 5 years, though, you said, right? In Serie A.
He's been in Serie A for more than 5 years. Yeah.
Right. Including like this season, obviously, but it wouldn't matter, I guess. Because it's more than 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Julian, didn't they get Koulibaly when Saint-Étienne was still in Ligue 2? Ligue 2?
That I don't know.
What were the other two hints?
For
non-Italian. The
bonus 2 and 3. Hint? 2 and 3, yeah.
2 and 3, he has played in Europa and Champions League. And then hint 3, he has made more than 45 appearances for his national team.
Wait, but I think Koulibaly declared for France, right?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Think so,
no. Maybe.
I thought he did. Michael, look that up.
No, you can't look anything.
I don't think. I don't
know.
That's
the point of this game.
Damn it.
How much time do we have, Chris?
Just over 2 minutes.
What about Mario Rui?
Yeah, like there's a lot of players. That could be.
Yeah, but he was in Rome. He's out of Roma though. But where did he?
It doesn't matter. He's been more than 5 years.
Yeah, he's played. Definitely played in Europa League.
Yeah. Wait. It didn't say that he played Europa League with like.
No, it just said they played in Europa League and Champions League.
Okay. So hasn't Napoli played both?
Yes. So. And I think he was with Roma too, so I think he played with Roma as well in the Champions League, I think.
I don't know.
But the thing is, I don't think he's played 45 times with
Yeah, that's a good question.
Portugal,
I don't know.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like it's Koulibaly. And I think he's been playing for Senegal, I think.
Yeah, I don't think he declared for France.
No?
Yeah. No. All right, we're locking it in? Because I can't think of it. It could be Skriniar.
1 minute left.
So it's between Skriniar and... How about this? Can I ask a question, or is it already...
I got it. If it's a stupid Chris question, you automatically lose.
Okay, so is it a European?
Not answering that.
Oh, damn it.
It's not a stupid question, but I will refuse to answer. 43 seconds.
All right, I say Koulibaly. I agree with you. It could be Koulibaly.
Sure.
Michael?
Go. Okay, run through the three hints and the bonus hint again.
Hint number one, non-Italian defender, has been in Serie A for more than 5 seasons. Hint two, he has played in Europa and Champions League. Hint three, he has made more than 45 appearances for his national team. Bonus hint, the year before coming to Serie A, he was not playing in a top five league.
Because I think he came from Saint-Étienne when they were still in League Two.
Okay. I'm okay with that. I think that's a good guess. Yeah, it's a good guess.
You're lucky because the timer literally just finished.
And?
You bastards are right again. But he did not come from Saint-Étienne. He came from a Belgian club, which is slipping my mind right now.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I'll look it up.
So he might have been Genk.
Yes.
So he might have been at Saint-Étienne before Genk. That's very possible. But
he was at Metz before.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. So yeah,
what was
yeah
next ten.
I'm not letting Julian play next week. That's been determined.
Okay, that was fun. I enjoyed that one. Thank you, Julian. It was very entertaining. Okay, so before we wrap it up, let's go round table. Let's go, Chris. Do you have anything to add before we wrap up?
I mean, my hints suck, so I got to I got to change it up. But no, it'll be good to get some club football back. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the Canada Panama World Cup qualifier tomorrow. So I'll hopefully have some comments for next week's podcast.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear your take on that game, Michael.
Yes, I only have this.
Nice. And while that's going on, Julian, what do you think? What are your final thoughts?
Let's say 4-0 for Canada. We need a win tomorrow. So.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So, like, are you... are you nervous about the Lazio game? Lazio Inter?
A little bit, but the one thing, like, the main guy missing from the Sanzo will be Lautaro. I think most of the Europeans are already back with Inter or joining up over the next day or two, so at least they have time to prep for the game. But yeah, it's just the fact that the South Americans have a qualifier Thursday night makes no sense to me.
And yeah, that does not make any sense to me as well, because what, there's less than 48 hours between both games?
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, what was the, you sent something to us this week too, something about like the World Cup
yes.
2022 or whatever.
Yeah, so I think there was like leaked reports from UEFA, from UEFA exactly, that they only would have a week, so national teams would only have a week to prepare before the World Cup in Qatar.
Yikes.
Yeah, so again, to have a World Cup in December is not a good idea. Okay, just want to get that out there. So, on that note, I'm also excited to see some club soccer. And most likely it will be Michael D'Angelo hosted again. So, Michael, thank you for allowing me to host this week.
See you. Yeah.
And we will see you all again next week. I hope you enjoy the club soccer. And as always, Forza Azzurri, no matter what the result is.
Yes.
Take care, everyone.
Now, enjoy the hymn of Genoa as we get into our interview with Fabrizio.
And welcome back, everyone, to Red to This Way. We have a very special guest, all the way from Toronto. Fabrizio Cardona. He's the he runs the Twitter account Genoa CFC _ Canada. Welcome, Fabrizio.
Hey, thank you for having me here at Forza Genoa.
Hey, Forza, of course. Fabrizio, so first off, we want to ask you about the season so far. So give us your thoughts on how the Genoa season is unfolding.
So do you have a second question? Because that's a very tough one to answer right off the bat.
You have all the time that you take it all.
No, I'm joking. It's a tough one. I mean, I don't know how many have followed in detail the actual beginning of the season for Genoa. Not to mention the first two games, which were basically close to unreachable, first in Inter and then Napoli. So it was already a given based on the fact of Preziosi, which I understand we're going to be talking about in a little bit more, of the fact of redoing for the nth time the squad again. So adding to the fact of new players that were just bought right at the tail end of the Calcio Mercato, so even when the season had already started. So what is there to say? the coach Ballardini is a very loved individual from the fans' perspective. So there is a lot of trust. But at this point, after one win and two ties, there's not much more to say other than we need points.
So you talk about points. So how damaging was that loss against Salernitana before the international break?
Salernitana was, I'm not going to say that it was a given because it's on the road, the 3 points. No, absolutely not. But definitely it was a bare mim to have 1 point. So the loss was tragic in a way. It was like a slap in the face. You see the players that are still not a team yet. So they're still trying to get to know each other. Some injuries happens here and there and so on. But there's still missing. It's, lots of pieces are not still well put together.
Okay, so I think I speak for all of us that we're big fans of Mattia Destro here on the show. So do you think that his return to form is sustainable?
Well, you know, is it? It's a tough question, tough answer, if I may say, based on the fact of his age. I mean, he's not a young pup anymore. And having said that, I mean, he's not like old as an individual himself, but as a striker, unless you have like your Cristiano Ronaldo, that is like your super alien human being that is on the face of the planet. It's going to be tough at, I can't remember now, is he like 32?
I think 30, yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be tough to have him ready, available in this ongoing championship with a lot of midweek games and so on, every game, all the 90 minutes and so on. So is it sustainable? Not fully 100%.
So I know Chris has a question about the transfer window.
Chris, we can't hear you.
By the way.
So I believe his question would have been is, what do you think Genoa needs to improve on in the January transfer window?
Huh, that's a good question. I haven't even thought that far yet, but definitely it will be needed. There's going to be an identity that has to be created, as I mentioned before, so it's not fully created yet. We haven't seen Caicedo still playing yet. Hopefully, seems he might be in the as a possibility for against Sassuolo. So I guess what will determine the January transfer window will be based on what's missing. Right now, there are certain aspects that are quite obvious, but that's also based on the fact that these guys they only have been playing together like more or less a month. I would say 80% of the team.
Okay, so are you optimistic that they're able to survive relegation this season?
I am going to say this. So there's two answers, I guess, two ways to answer this, with the heart and with the head. So the heart will definitely say yes. With the head, I'm going to be on the fence to say I don't know yet. It all depends on different factors. Important players have been bought. I think it's a lower step compared to after January from last year, like after the January market from last year, losing people like Zappacosta and Strutman, as just to mention too. So we didn't replace fully those two people, especially on the, that's the, okay. So let me, now that I'm saying this, I know to answer the question before. So the January window, we will definitely have to go into looking at the wings. So left and right wing.
Okay. So then my follow up question to that is, so Cambiaso is not good enough to start game in, game out then?
Well, he is a potential, like, mind you, this guy is like, what is he like? Just turned 20, I think.
Yeah,
right?
I think so, yeah.
So the sad part we'll having to see him go. But this was with Preziosi's method and way of doing calcio and maintaining the squad. With the new ownership, I don't know really yet what will their intention will be. Are they going to build up on the team and then aim for higher and not necessarily bring up talent and sell them immediately. I don't know. That's not what they're saying, but, you know.
Okay, well, actually, Julian has a follow-up question about the new owners.
Yeah, that just kind of tied perfectly into it. So what do you think about them overall, and what do you think of them saying the Scudetto is their eventual goal? How long do you think that'll take to reach?
Well, if we're all passionate about Calcio, we know that answer automatically. It's not going to happen day overnight. Mm-hmm. The model, and they were not hiding it, is going to be after Atalanta's model. So they're quite interested in what Atalanta has made themselves in these years. And we know that Atalanta was not built overnight as well. And I would say 90%, if I can say, it's thanks to the coach that we gave them, but or Preziosi gave them. Other than that, what do I think about them? I think they have brought a fresh breath in the environment. People are enthusiastic. Obviously, any type of words about where they're aiming for tenfold going to make that look like the tenth Scudetto, therefore the star on the kit, on the jersey, and so on. So, you know, people can dream, and they're entitled to do that, right? Obviously, it's always been my dream too, but hey, from there to happen, we have to see, because there's still other teams to compete against.
For sure.
You kind of alluded to this before, but is the Gasperini era the best era of Genoa's modern history?
Well, that's a good question, because I think a lot of fan base are 50-50 on this. Because if you look under the tenure about the two coaches, whoever brought Genoa at a higher rank is Gasperini. Mm-hmm. Ballardini coming back for the fourth time is in the hearts of the fans. There's no doubt about that. He saved the team four times, and which should not have happened, but that's a different story, right? But nevertheless, like, fans will always keep in their hearts forever. And I'm talking about Ballardini. Gasperini, on the different hand, is like, he has brought Genoa back to the higher ranks, and to the left side of the standings, mm-hmm. you might say, and so on. Even right off the bat from Serie B, so that was like something unexpected from everybody.
Right.
So, you know, I know you wanted to talk about Preziosi. So here's your chance. You can let it all out. what do you think his legacy is?
It's a tough one, because if a lot of fans might even go against with what I'm about to say, but I've always considered myself to be like your middle, in between, in a sense. Like, when he first started, he had so much enthusiasm in the sector. He is considered to be one of the most knowledgeable people in talent search and about culture overall. So in the first, what did he do? Like 13 years, 12 years? I can't remember now. In the first few years, except the, we can talk after about the, let's call them mistakes he has done. But other than that, I mean, the enthusiasm was there, and he did bring the team with Gasperini. It was a bet back then. Nobody knew. I mean, they knew who Gasperini was, but it wasn't like, you know, your known coach and so on. But after that, it all went downhill. After the departure of Milito and so on, it was just, there was a few years of still good placings, if I may say. But since then, that's what I'm, all this to say, the heaviest part, that for me anyways, has been over 5 years, I would say, rock bottom, close to, if not almost relegated, and we just made it, like, just for a blink of an eye. Others obviously are going to add to that the fact of always selling the important players. There is no continuity. You only have a very few players. Like, you can probably count them on the hand of who continues to stay for long term. Example, Crisito, the captain. Or, and others are going to say, like, with that mess that he has created when he just first started with the relegation down to City Chief.
So, what do you think about the decision about Preziosi staying on as, I guess you can call, the representative with the Lega Serie A?
Now, on the Serie A aspect, I don't know, because I don't know well enough within there what's his weight in the Serie A management. But when it comes to the board of Genoa, I think nothing is official, but what the news has said is he's going to stay on the team, on the management team anyways, for 3 years. I think it's, if he doesn't, apparently he will not have any decision power, but if he is there to lead this this group, to give them advice and so on, where it's just taken as advice and then the new owners are going to make their own call, then I don't see why that would be a problem.
Okay. And then, so you talked about the new owners as well. What do you think that their short-term goal should be?
Short-term goal is definitely to catch the fans back, to bring them back to the stadium. We've seen Genoa fans going to the stadium even in bad situations. But, I mean, what I'm trying to say with this is bringing the love back. And surely, and I hope the other fans are not going to get upset at me, but surely Genoa has more fan base, at least in the city.
Well, according to Euro, it was 50-50, but I get your point.
Well, you know, when things go better, we're going to see what happens.
Okay.
But yeah, you're right. Anyways, jokes on the side. I forgot the question. Sorry.
I'll help you out. So, do you think that giving free tickets to the game?
Oh, right.
This past game. So, do you think that's a good start to kind of win the trust of the fans back?
Well, that's not enough. Obviously, I'm not saying they are going to have to continuously give free tickets. No, they should not be doing that. That's bad marketing and bad management. But definitely, that was a great gesture to say, "Hey, we're here. We want to present, introduce ourselves." I know stadiums are not 100%. It's not our fault, but at least I think at that point it was 50%. But that was a nice gesture. I think it was a nice opener. The question, so what do they have to do in the short term? Mm-hmm. First, focus on the fan base, and second, continuity. So I don't know if Ballardini will be the next year coach. I don't know. I have a feeling no. But then build up the team with whomever that individual might be.
Chris, I know you have another question.
Yeah, so I'm more so curious. excuse me. How did you start the? When did the Twitter account come into play? Maybe kind of just walk us through that timeline and how it all came together.
For sure. Okay. So, long story short, as I also mentioned to you guys earlier, but I was born in Genova. I came to Canada, to Toronto, when I was 6 months old. Then I moved back to Italy when I was like mid school. And that's when I first started to, because up until then, I didn't have any exposure to soccer. Also, because in North America, there was no soccer at all. Maybe a little bit, if I recall, back in the days of Betega with Toronto Blizzards, but this was nothing to even mention. Anyways. then when I went back to Genova, as you guys know, obviously Italy, it's all about culture, right? It's all about soccer. So being in Genova, you would say, well, you have 50-50 of choices to make, right? Also, because I think when I moved to Italy, Genoa was still in Serie B, but nevertheless, it was the name of the city in English, It was the colors, which were not a mess of different thousands of colors, but it was just two beautiful colors. Hint, hint, but... no, it's just the two colors to me are just like warm and very strong, powerful colors. And that's what also made me choose. And then from there, it just grew from there. All the way to my first match was the derby against Sampdoria. It was an amazing experience. And then when I moved back to Canada when I was 25, I decided to be like a prophet sort of thing, in a sense. Not, maybe prophet's a big word, but I at that point, so this is 1995, soccer wasn't big still yet in North America. MLS, I think it was about to start, but maybe not. Most of the fans were pro premiership, so the UK premiership. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to profess a little bit more of Serie A, definitely profess more about Genoa, which obviously not too many would have known. And together with that, also touristic wise for the city of Genoa. And that's when it all started. So back then, social media was not present. So I had bought a .com for GenoaClubToronto.com, which is defunct now, by the way. But I was happy to be the first website to portray some news of Genoa in English back then. Right. I was replicating the official one, obviously. But and then from there, the social media started and so on. So Facebook and Instagram and Twitter are the three social entities that I use now.
Oh, very cool. So almost a bit of a pioneer with bringing Genoa to,
that's it.
To our country.
So you talk about going to see a derby at the Stadio Luigi Ferraris. Because whenever time I go to Italy, I try to go to as many games as possible. I've been to the Stadio Olimpico, I've been to the San Paolo, and can you describe me the atmosphere at the Stadio Ferraris?
For sure. Well, needless to say that the two experiences that you had, I'm sure they were amazing. Mm-hmm. The stadiums are quite similar. So they're a ring, like an O shape.
Yeah.
But they're very distant from the field, from the mm-hmm. pitch. While San Siro, but even more Luigi Ferraris, which is the Genoa Stadium, Genoa, the city of Genoa, but the name Ferraris is a player of Genoa, by the way, again.
Point Genoa.
It just every player I've heard when they do interviews now, they don't have to say things like this, but what they are saying is the atmosphere, the warmth, and the feeling that all players have when they go to Barassi, to the Ferraris, is incredible and unreached in any other stadium in Italy. You might feel some of them because it's in England, because it's a stadium English style. So yeah, the feeling there, the standings just finish right where the pitch starts. So the feel, the 12th man, which is the fans, just really does make the difference. So that's why it also hurt a little bit, a lot actually, with the COVID, obviously. But that's for every team, mind you. But So yeah, and I remember all players when they say, when we go and play in Genoa, we always know that the stadium effect is a great factor when we go and play against Genoa and Sampdoria.
Now, next time I go to Italy, I think I have to.
It's a must.
Yeah, okay, perfect. You can definitely convince me now at this point. Michael, did you have any other questions?
No, all I was going to say is that I guess we're going to have to find some sort of Sampdoria fan to kind of have some sort of battle here. Sorry. Yeah.
Julian?
No, I'm good. I thought this was actually this was a really cool interview. I've been to Genoa probably about 10 years ago now. Oh, fortunately, wow. It was in the summer, so I didn't get to see a game, but I really did love the city.
It's similar to Torino. I don't know if you ever guys ever been to Torino, but it's one of those not most common known cities of Italy. But there's so much to see, so much to live that it's worthwhile. Definitely worth it.
Yeah, I loved it when I was there.
Fabrizio, I want to thank you for a great interview. I think we all learned a lot about Genoa, the club, and Genoa, the city. And again, you're always welcome to come back on Red to This Way. And once again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for calling me. That was my pleasure to be a guest of you guys. And I'm more than welcome to come anytime you want.
Perfect. Thank you once again.
Thank you, Forza Genoa.